Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too. And what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Imagine that your child gets off of the school bus and is never seen again. We've told stories on this podcast of just that scenario. But imagine that it happens and no one seems to care. That's the hell that Nina Cancel found herself in on February 4th, 2014, when her 13-year-old son, Christopher Lewis, got off the bus but never made it home. While Nina did what any normal parent would do in this situation, she looked for him, she called police. The response that she received wasn't normal in terms of the stories that we've covered previously. There is no wide-scale search, no community banding together, no media coverage. Just a shattered family with an empty space and no answers. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Christopher Lewis. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Probably going to end up being a short episode because there simply isn't a lot to dig into regarding this case. Because as I mentioned in the intro, it has garnered very little media attention. So, like, honestly, I came across this case and it just made me so angry. And this is probably just going to be like a lot of me bitching about the system. But I will say that when I did look into this case and do the research for the episode, I did learn a few things that I think are really important and I want to share with our listeners. And plus, even if I don't have a ton of information around Christopher Lewis and his disappearance, like, it's important to me to just say his name and at least get his story out there a little bit, because he deserves to have people talking about him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and any type of coverage in a missing persons case, that's what you need to get the person home. So if we could help facilitate that, given what it sounds like there was lacking media coverage or any type of coverage, then, you know, by all means, let's do it.
Yeah.
Even if it's a short episode.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get into it and talk about Chris. Christopher Brian Lewis was born on July 20th, 2000 in Boston, Massachusetts to Nina Cancel, and he was the oldest of four siblings. Chris and his family lived in the Dorchester area of Boston, and Dorchester is Boston's largest neighborhood. It's where the Kennedys and the Wahlbergs are all from. Dorchester has seen shifting demographics and increasing crime throughout the years, but at the time of Chris's disappearance in 2014, crime in Boston in general was on a downswing. Chris seemed to be a pretty sensitive kid. He had a Facebook page, and his last two posts were from April of 2013. His last two public posts, I should say. I don't know, you know, if he had any posts after that, but what I was able to see was in April 2013, just under a year before he disappeared. And they read, quote, "If I had a chance to be perfect, would you love me?" End quote. And "Life hurts. All you ask for is love. Some people just can't do it. They pretend to love, then put you out like trash, but yet tell you you meant the world to them," end quote.
So if those are quotes directly from him and not necessarily song lyrics that from songs that I don't know, which is, you know, not surprising. Mm-hmm. That's showing, you know, signs of early depression.
Yeah.
So he's 12 at the time and he's writing things like that on Facebook. Also, what 12-year-old has a Facebook account.
Oh, a lot of them. I mean, and especially back then before Facebook became like super lame.
And you know, political.
Well, yeah. And like now kids don't want to have anything to do with Facebook because it's for old people.
True. Yeah. Right. What is it now? Instagram? Is that it?
Oh, TikTok? I mean, that was, yeah, I think for TikTok.
Okay.
Yeah. It does give you a little bit of an insight though into what he was going through. I mean, but it is impossible to glean a whole lot from two posts.
Yeah, 10 months
before someone disappears.
Right.
You know, like maybe he was simply having a bad day. Or, you know, maybe there was something deeper going on. When I was researching this case, I found a Reddit thread in which someone who claims to have worked at the Lee School where Chris was a student said, quote, "I do remember that he wasn't very, quote, popular and was considered to have some behavioral issues, but he just wanted attention and to be accepted. He was, is I hope, a really sweet kid," end quote. Like 12, 13 is a hard time. Like it's a sucky kind of time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Middle school.
It's rough.
Is tough. I mean, it's the beginning of puberty. It's the beginning of trying to find yourself, finding your social circles. I mean, it can take you down some pretty dark avenues.
Yeah, absolutely. This poster also said that Chris attended the after-school program at Lee, which makes sense with the timeline that his mother gave, which she said she expected him home at 5:30 that day. Yeah, because like that was one of the things that was confusing to me when I was reading the very limited information was
how late he was supposed to get home.
He was like coming home on the school bus, and she's like, "I expected him home at 5:30, and I thought that seems like a lot of time. But yeah, so he was in an after school program. On February 4th, 2014, Chris took the bus home, which dropped him off at the corner of Morton and West Selden. Nina later confirmed with the bus driver that Christopher was definitely on the bus. Chris's best friend also confirms this and said that he and Chris got off at the same stop and walked about a block together. And then Chris's friend broke off and headed, you know, to his own house. And he just assumed that Chris did the same. Because at that point, they were only about a block away from Chris's house. But Christopher didn't walk that last block home. So 5:30 came and went, and Nina didn't see her son. By the time 6 o'clock rolled around, she started to get worried. She went out to look for him, but couldn't find any trace of the 13-year-old. Now, it's not clear exactly when she called the police and reported him missing. The earliest notice I could find about him on the internet was nearly 2 months later, in April. But that certainly doesn't mean that she waited that long or anything. And usually, like, if something suspicious like that is going on, police mention that in statements and things. Like, if they're like, "Oh, yeah, this 13-year-old's missing. And by the way, like, the mother didn't report her for 2 months," like, I think that's going to come up.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Because that passes the liability off of them.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Having not responded for that long.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm assuming that she, you know, reported him missing like that day or, you know, the next day. And I think this is just more so a case of not getting any media attention, you know, that it was just the first time anybody mentioned it was 2 months later. And they're like, "Oh, yeah, Boston police are still looking for this 13-year-old.
What's the cutoff age for an Amber Alert?
So according to amberalert.ojp.gov, the criteria for an Amber Alert are that there's reasonable belief by law enforcement that an abduction has occurred. The law enforcement agency believes the child is in imminent danger of serious bodily injury or death. There's enough descriptive information about the victim and the abduction for law enforcement to issue an Amber Alert to assist in the recovery of the child. The abduction is of a child aged 17 years or younger, and the child's name and other critical data elements, including the child abduction flag, have been entered into the National Crime Information Center, NCIC, system. So, yes, I mean, based on his age, like, he absolutely could have gotten an Amber Alert.
Except that there's no indication of an abduction.
And that's what we're going to be talking about. And I think that's the crux of the whole problem here. Instead of an Amber Alert or anything like that, when Nina called the police to report her son missing, she was largely met with disinterest. And now here is where possibly a major contradiction comes into play. According to Boston PD, Christopher had run away before. This is even mentioned on his Charlie Project page, which says, quote, Christopher has disappeared before and has been found in the Fields Corner area of Dorchester in the past, end quote. But Nina, his mother, vehemently denies that Chris has ever run away previously. She told Boston's Fox 25 in 2016, quote, Chris always came home. Chris always called me no matter what, end quote.
So this is the first time I've heard of the specific guidelines on an Amber Alert only having to do with abductions.
Yes.
I'm kind of dumbfounded by its narrowing of a missing person to only a child abduction.
Mm-hmm.
Like a missing person, a missing child is a missing child.
Yeah.
Whether
is my whole entire point.
Whether
with
they
this
run
episode.
Away yeah. or not.
Or get lost.
Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you want to put that out to the public so that you've got more eyes looking for this person, whether they want to be found or not?
Yeah.
They're a child.
Exactly. Like, who cares if a 13-year-old wants to be found?
Yeah. The mere fact that they are underage should put them at a high-risk category, and the Amber Alert should be issued.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard the specifics narrowing it down to just an abduction.
Yeah, I did actually know that. Like, and it is. It's crazy. And so, I mean, and that's, I think, why we just run into these situations where, like, in a lot of the cases that we've covered, that Amber Alerts have not been a part of it because there's just, you know, questions over, like, what happened or when they went missing or
who
whatever.
Who cares?
I know. Yeah. But I think the goal is, you know, from their point of view is, one, because you got to think about missing children. Statistics in general. There are like hundreds of thousands of missing persons cases reported annually. The vast majority of those cases, like the person comes back home.
Right.
Know,
yeah.
Within a few days. Right. And same thing with stranger abductions. So stranger abductions are exceedingly rare. There are only about something like 127 verified stranger abductions per year in this country. And so I think the idea behind this is to kind of narrow down this, like, this pool of possible Amber Alerts. Because if we're having Amber Alerts for like every single random missing quote unquote person or child, you know, that people might become desensitized to them.
This is like the antithesis of our childhood. I mean, I feel like everything growing up was, you know, it's 5 o'clock. Do you know where your children are?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like
for sure.
Everything growing up in the 80s was kids are always going to be abducted all the time.
And yeah,
you
no.
need to know where your children are at all times.
Yeah, you're absolutely true. Like the 80s really was a time of stranger danger. And I highly recommend to our listeners, if you have not listened to the podcast In the Dark, it is fantastic. And their first season deals with the abduction of Jacob Wetterling, who went missing. And, you know, his abduction ended up leading to like the creation of the sex offender registry and things like that. And it really goes and takes a deep journalistic dive into the culture of like the 80s and 90s and this whole issue of stranger danger. And it's fascinating, but yeah, it's the statistics don't bear that out at all.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. I just don't, I mean, from a law enforcement perspective, you know, it doesn't take any resources away from law enforcement to issue an Amber Alert. That's just, it's not. And okay, I kind of see your point of desensitizing the general public from, mm-hmm. you know, constant bombardments of Amber Alerts. But I don't know. It just, to me, I would err on the side of caution.
Yeah,
and well, so issue them anyway.
I think that, and again, we are going to kind of talk about this, but I think that there needs to be something, whether it's an Amber Alert or not.
Or maybe create a different level of
exactly
a missing child alert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like with the Amber Alert, they really like, that's something where they want to have an idea of who it is, like look out for this car with this license plate, you know,
right.
et cetera, et cetera. And right. when you don't have that information, you maybe an Amber Alert isn't the right way to do it, but I mean, there has to be something.
And I do know that there are other alerts that mm-hmm. go out to law enforcement,
yes.
not the public at large, but critical missing or mm-hmm. missing juveniles or whatever. But I feel like some of those should probably go out to the public as well.
Yeah, because like if the cops are like, oh, well, they're a runaway, who cares?
Right. What difference does it make if you send that out to another jurisdiction?
Yeah.
Like the neighboring jurisdiction. It's probably going to be read the same way. And more likely than not, neighbors or friends or people that live in that community or the neighboring communities might see them.
Right,
exactly. As opposed to relying strictly on law enforcement.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it would make sense that those level of alerts go out to public as well.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. But yeah, that's none of this happened in this situation. And so now we're having this big disagreement between Nina and Boston police. They're saying he's run away previously, so he's a runaway. She's saying, no, he hasn't. Like, he definitely has not run away. Something is wrong.
Even if he had run away before, who cares?
Well, I know, and that's the thing. And even if he had, like, he was always found, obviously, because the police even said, like, he was always found in this, you know, particular section of Dorchester. So when he's not found, that should maybe be a clue that something else is going on.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, so this is actually why I wanted to cover this, because it's the part that made my blood boil, you know, which was I saw the summary of this missing kid and it said, police just assume he's a runaway. I'm like, so what if he is? He was 13. He right. was a child. Yeah.
Go looking for him.
Yeah. And he was, you know, so at the time.
And maybe they did. Maybe some of them did. We don't know.
Yeah. It does not sound like it. You know, at the time, he was about average height for his age. He was 5'1", but he was only 87 pounds. You know, like he was a little kid. Whether or not he, you know, decided not to go home or he fell victim to foul play, like he needed someone to be looking for him. But it really doesn't seem like that happened. Nina started a Facebook page for her son on June 28th, 2014, just under 5 months after his disappearance. And the posts show a mother who is desperately missing a son who no one seems to care is gone. On July 1st, she wrote, quote, "Today I spent the day on the phone and online. I was calling the news stations and online emailing all the newspapers. I got nothing from the news stations, waiting on responses from the papers," end quote. But from what I could find, she did not get any traction. I couldn't really find anything on Christopher until about a year after he disappeared. So that's when I started seeing news stories that are like, oh, this Dorchester boy has been missing for a year. Like, have you seen him?
That's insane to me.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. In fact, looking at her posts, she was still trying to get local news to cover his story in August of 2014 with no luck. So with police apparently not doing any sort of an investigation and media not reporting on Chris, Nina like just had to do what she could. And so she put up flyers, she talked about her son to anyone who would listen, and she held candlelight vigils. She contacted her friends, she contacted his friends, she contacted family members, but no one in Christopher's life heard a word from the boy after February 4th, 2014.
Where's Chris's dad?
No, Chris's dad is never mentioned in this whole thing, so I was under the impression that he's just not a part of this at all.
I mean, to me, he would be a person of interest.
Well, so I did see something unconfirmed online that somebody does think they found the man who was Chris's father, but he passed away.
Okay.
And I think it might have even been prior to his disappearance. So I don't think that he's a factor.
Okay. See, you know, without a proper police investigation, at least mm-hmm. initially, you know, the number of suspects are infinite. You know, what was going on in Christopher's life? What was going on in his mom's life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, was there a boyfriend
right.
in the picture? Was there an ex-boyfriend who was mad at Nina? Those are the type of things that need to be found out right away.
Right.
To narrow down the suspect pool, you know, and without any information on that, without seemingly an actual investigation being done, the possibilities of where Christopher could be are limitless.
They are. And nothing about this case that has come from the Boston Police Department or any other official channel has any more information than what I've already given you.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I hope they looked into these people. I hope that they did some sort of investigation, but I have no idea. Boston Police have never come out and, you know, given any sort of statement about their efforts in looking for Christopher. Nothing.
I'm floored. I mean, I cannot, this was 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't imagine that there wasn't some level of investigation done.
Yeah, well,
I get not wanting to come out and give details publicly if it's an active investigation,
of course, yeah.
But something.
Yeah.
Just say it's an ongoing and active investigation instead of what seems to be the response was, he's a runaway.
Yep. Like, oops, guess we lost one. Like, I mean,
yeah,
it's amazing. And one of the links that I have on our blog is from the Boston Police Department. And it's just like this little notice, like missing Dorchester, 13-year-old, last seen wearing, you know, Nikes in a shirt. Like, it's nothing. So that's the whole reason I wanted to cover this, because of the notion that he's a runaway and how that contributed to the police and media doing basically nothing to help get him home. So while we don't have a lot more information about Christopher, I did want to take this opportunity to talk a little more about the larger issues, which are that of runaways and missing people of color. NCMEC defines an endangered runaway as a child under the age of 18 who is missing on his or her own accord and whose whereabouts are unknown to their parent or legal guardian. In 2019, 91% of cases reported to NCMEC fell into this category. But it's important to note that NCMEC has actually stopped distinguishing between the type of missing kid, because at the end of the day, they're missing kids and they need to be found.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Robert Lowery, vice president of the Missing Child Division at NCMEC, told CNN in 2019, quote, "Frankly, we were dealing with a desensitized public and media when we did that. So now if you check our website, our children are just listed as missing child," end quote. That CNN article that I just mentioned is all about the disparity between police and media reactions between Black and white missing children. In 2018, the National Crime Information Center, or NCIC, said that 37% of the missing children in their database were Black, despite Black children only making up 14% of the U.S. population. Yet a 2015 study showed that while Black children accounted for about 35% of missing children, they only received about 7% of media references. But this isn't only a media problem. There are other factors that contribute to the general public not hearing about Black missing kids as much as we hear about white missing kids. One is the inherent distrust between the Black community and police. Natalie Wilson, co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation, told CNN that this distrust contributes to a, quote, silent code of no snitching, end quote, which can prevent a proper response from law enforcement. This is also a factor in Latino communities where missing children can be underreported because families who have undocumented members are fearful of being deported. So, you know, we just have these, the society where there's such a distrust and such a fear among, you know, of police that when it comes to having the police do the thing that they're supposed to be doing, like they're too afraid to call them.
The issue all comes down to the type of policing that exists in America today, that it's not community oriented.
Mm-hmm.
If you have community oriented policing, if you have cops that are out of their cars, that are getting to know the community, they're building that trust. They're realizing, okay, there's undocumented workers, undocumented people living there, but who cares? That's not an issue for the beat cop. They're a good family. If you have community-oriented policing, then that trust gets rebuilt, and then these issues become moot.
Mm-hmm. Another factor that feeds into this is families not having the means to help supplement a police investigation. And this was interesting to me. So like they may not be able to hire a private investigator or take off work to help with search efforts. And I do find that really interesting because, you know, in a lot of the stories we cover, like that's exactly what these parents are doing. And, you know, if you can't do that, then your child is automatically, you know, not getting the level that these other children are getting.
Right. But part of that also falls back to law enforcement. Look, I understand any level of community, the police may not have the resources to devote time and money to missing persons cases, missing children's cases. But the reality is these people need a voice.
Absolutely.
It should come from law enforcement.
Right. Parents shouldn't have to hire private investigators.
Correct.
When their children go missing.
Yes. When somebody goes missing, children specifically,
yeah,
law enforcement should be the one spearheading not only the investigation, but the media coverage. That should be law enforcement's job.
Well, and you know what that just reminded me of? The Watts family documentary on Netflix. Remember when she went missing and police were out in the streets, like stopping cars with flyers? They were going door to door with flyers.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, and I get that you can't do that within every single case, but I mean, something
though. I mean, hold a press conference.
Yeah.
Assign some detective to spearhead the investigation into a missing persons. Hey, guess what? If they come back in 24 hours, okay.
Yeah.
You file the report.
Yeah. What? Or hey, guess what? We've got a happy ending. Like,
yeah.
Yay, feel good media story.
Yeah. And you want to boost your image in the community,
mm-hmm,
as a police department? If that happens, great. Put that out there too.
Yeah, you look like you're doing a great job.
Yeah, exactly. Don't ignore a missing kid.
Another issue that influences this whole thing goes back to a child being classified as a runaway. Studies show that Black children are overrepresented in foster care, and a significant number of missing children have gone missing from foster care. And law enforcement is often quick to classify a non-white child as a runaway without having all the details. Nancy Wilson says in that same CNN article, quote, because those kids are considered to have voluntarily left home, Amber Alerts aren't sent out about them and they typically aren't covered in the news, end quote.
I was a social worker,
mm-hmm,
before I went into law enforcement. And I'm not saying I advocate for kids to run away, but I certainly understand
why
the system and, mm-hmm, seeing the conditions that some of these kids were in while they were in foster care. I can certainly understand the mindset of a 12, a 13-year-old who has been living that way in the system with really no hope of finding the quote-unquote forever family. and what it does to them. I've seen it firsthand. I don't care whether they ran away.
Right.
That's
they still need somebody caring for them and caring about them. And okay, maybe not bringing them back home there.
Maybe not to that foster home. Right. Yeah. Or,
but doing something. Somebody needs to just keep track of these kids.
Right. And, you know, from the perspective of a caseworker who worked with CYS, that's also next to impossible for their caseworker to lead that charge.
Mm-hmm.
Because typically they will have 30 or 40 cases, mm-hmm. depending on the area, the jurisdiction. And, you know, they are responsible for those kids as well. So for them to take up the mantle of leading the investigation of a missing child.
Yeah, that can't be up to them.
They also don't have the authority
no.
to do that. So it really falls to law enforcement to spearhead that in conjunction with the social worker, with the families. But it's law enforcement that can call press conferences, that can get the media attention, that can get the attention of the neighborhoods.
And they need to. I mean, again, so what happened in this case was that he was immediately written off as a runaway. Never mind that 77% of endangered runaways are aged 15 to 17, and Christopher was only 13. And never mind the fact that he was literally on his way home from school. And never mind the fact that if he did indeed run away previously, as police contend, he was found quickly. They still wrote him off. But luckily, as I kind of alluded to before, there are organizations out there that are aiming to change this. The Black and Missing Foundation, who I mentioned earlier, is a great one. But I also learned about an organization that I had never heard of called Peas in Their Pods. According to their website, PEAS is an established 501c3 nonprofit organization founded in 2007 whose mission is to give a voice to missing children of color and their families and to fight against child abuse and sexual exploitation. They assist families in the form of media campaigns, a public alerting system, and parent advocacy services to increase awareness. PEAS also provides free prevention trainings and safety seminars to the community to improve child safety measures. And the public alert system that they mention is actually the RILA alert. Again, according to their website, quote, "The RILA alert system was created to help spread awareness about the disproportionate amount of media attention that missing African American children receive. This alert system helps to bridge this discrepancy by shortening the response time in which crucial information is shared with the public. It is transmitted to the public electronically, similar to the Amber Alert, but without their stringent criteria that can impede progress or immediate attention or action. The RILA alert is not meant to replace the Amber Alert system. It simply bridges the gap where the Amber Alert excludes or does not engage due to program criteria," end quote.
That's exactly what I said.
Exactly, yeah. And again, I think that that's what is needed. I mean, we need something to bridge the gap. And, you know, yes, okay, if an Amber Alert has this criteria, that's great, that's their thing. But now we have the RILA alert that will hopefully help with the situation. So the RILA alert is named for a little girl named RILA Wilson. Her name actually was an acronym, and it stood for Remember I Love You Always. Remember how I mentioned that a large number of missing children go missing from foster care?
Mm-hmm.
RILA is the perfect example of this. She was a four-year-old who was in the custody of Florida's DCFS when she went missing. That in and of itself is obviously tragic, but it was 2 years before anyone in the organization noticed she was gone.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
I mean, that is a failure of their Children Youth Service on every level.
Every imaginable level. And I mean, it's bad enough that they're saying that this 13-year-old Christopher Lewis, like, ran away from home and just went off to start a new life, and we don't need to worry about him. But Rilo was 4.
So she was in the system, so she had to have a social worker.
Yeah.
How was she not checked in on?
I don't know, but it took 2 years for anybody in DCFS to realize she was gone.
I mean, there are laws in place where that social worker can go to jail. There are mandated reporting, mandated visits that have to be documented.
Right.
And if they're found to be falsified or they don't happen, those social workers go to jail. I know this because that's part of the red tape of the job.
Right.
How does that happen? 2 years.
2 years. A 4-year-old. I know this is getting to be a very stressful episode. And, you know, like, I'm sorry, but I just think that this is so important. And, you know, I started this podcast because I truly, truly want to tell these stories and get these people's names out there. And I think it's so important to just talk about the larger issues, as, you know, even though it might not be as entertaining as other episodes, I guess. I don't know. Right. But like, it, my goal isn't.
We're not here to entertain.
Yeah.
We're just here to get information out.
Yeah. Right. And I just really, this one meant a lot to me. Like, I could not stop thinking about this little boy.
Well, he's also very close in age to our boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And I just couldn't imagine, you know, the horror of not only having your child go missing, but to just be met with complete indifference.
Disinterest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And there were rumors that, oh, like, oh, he was involved in gangs. But like,
Who cares?
Yeah. And also, there's like no evidence to that whatsoever.
Who cares if he was?
Yeah.
He's still a 13-year-old kid that didn't come home.
Yeah. He was a little boy. So back to Pease, which is an amazing organization that I'm so happy I got to learn about. They say, quote, the Rilo Alert system is named in her honor, as it is our fundamental belief that everyone should be made aware when a child is missing, regardless of race, gender, socioeconomic status, or age. Moreover, every child should be considered a national priority once reported or labeled as a missing person, end quote. And we'll have the site and the Black and Missing Foundation linked on our blog. So I encourage everyone listening to go there and learn about these two important organizations. And I know that I will definitely also be making a donation there this month, because I am just blown away by the fact that they saw a need and just really, like, they nailed it. I mean, this is what needs to be done.
Yeah, absolutely.
As someone who has always been aware of the inner workings of media, the trope of the missing white girl getting all the attention is not lost on me. And, you know, you and I have talked about this privately in terms of this podcast. It's very important to me that we, as content creators, try our best to cover missing people of all races and socioeconomic statuses. And are we going to be perfect? Like, no. Will we still cover missing white girls? Yes. Our very last episode on Morgan Nick was about a missing white girl. But for every Morgan Nick, I want to bring you a Bear Diaz or a Relisha Rudd or Danica Childs or a Christopher Lewis. Because all of these people are missed. They all have people who love them, and they all deserve to have their stories told and to be found. Christopher Brian Lewis has been missing since February 4th, 2014. At the time of his disappearance, he was 13 years old, 5'1", and 87 pounds. Christopher is biracial, Black and Hispanic, and he has brown hair and brown eyes. He wears glasses and has a scar on his bottom lip and a scar through his left eyebrow. He would be 20 years old today. If you have any information about Chris's disappearance, please contact the Boston Police Department at 617-343-4687. Or you can contact NCMEC at 1-800-THE-LOST. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, on our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook, and at @ATTWGPod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we want to hear from you. You can also leave us a message at the link in the show notes, and we may play it on a future episode. We'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.